From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. One 100 years ago, on November 11th, World War I ended with a ceasefire between the Allies and Germany. It's recalled as Armistice Day or Remembrance Day. In the U.S., November 11th is observed as Veterans Day, a time to honor military veterans. Today we meet Ian Brown, a Marine veteran whose experience with the running group Back on My Feet helped turn his life around.
November 11th was the day I just said, I can't do this anymore. This is not who I am. This is not the person my parents raised. This is not the man the Marines made. I have to do something different.
Plus, we asked two Polish Baltimoreans about the significance of November 11th as Polish Independence Day. All on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. 100 years ago, at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, World War I finally came to an end when the ceasefire with Germany went into effect. It's recalled as Armistice Day or Remembrance Day. In the U.S., November 11th is observed as Veterans Day, a time to honor military veterans of all stripes. Later in the show, we'll hear how November 11th is also significant as the 100th anniversary of Polish independence. But first, we'll talk with Ian Brown, a Marine veteran and a volunteer member of the nonprofit Back on My Feet, an early morning running group that provides encouragement, support, and resources to people experiencing homelessness. Welcome, Ian.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Also here is Jacqueline Range, avid runner and executive director for Back on My Feet. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
Jacqueline, tell us about how Back on My Feet works. What do you do? When do you meet?
Sure. So we are a national nonprofit organization, and we use running to combat homelessness. So we run, and then we surround individuals with community and resources, housing, employment resources to help their path forward. So kind of meeting people are at where they're at and building a foundation of community, of support, of positivity, and then using that to be able to help to translate into housing, education, and employment.
And when you say we run, what does that mean?
We literally run. We run at on Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings at 5:30 a.m., five different locations around Baltimore City. 1 to 4 miles, we run, we walk, run. And, you know, you kind of build community in that time, in that space, that running's a part of it. But, you know, it's time to talk and debrief and clear your mind and get to meet people, hear their stories, and foster relationships.
You said four different locations?
Five.
Five different locations. How many volunteers do you have?
Well over 100 that will come out on a regular basis and join up with those teams at any of those five locations.
You've told us a little bit, but tell us more about what the group provides for members.
Sure. So I think initially people do think it's just running. They come out and, you know, they want to learn a little bit more. What is this? They're understandably skeptical, as I know Ian can attest to. Who are these people and what do they want from me at 5:30 in the morning? And it is honestly, you know, just to build community, just to foster a relationship. And then once we have that foundation, it gives us the opportunity to ask, where are you going? And how can Back on My Feet help you get there? So, you know, really wanting to meet people at where they're at on their life path, that, you know, are you looking to get back in the workforce? Are you looking to move out into your own place? How can we help remove the barriers that are in your way to getting there? And how can we help provide you the resources that you need to reach those goals?
Ian, before I ask you why you were skeptical, tell me about your military service background.
As a young child, I remember seeing all the commercials for the Marines, and I was immediately enamored. I just said to myself, that's what I want to do. But really, one of the biggest things that helped me make the decision was there were people who told me I couldn't do it. I was the only Marine. I would have been the only Marine in my family. So those were goals that I wanted to accomplish. I've always been a driven person. If you tell me I can't do something, it makes me want to do it that much more. And the fact that I was going to be the only Marine representing my family made it that more much more special for me.
So you joined the Marines and served when?
I am a Desert Storm veteran, era veteran. Actually, my first tour of combat was in Operation Just Cause in Panama in 1989. I was actually enlisted in the Marine Corps before I graduated from high school. It's called the Delayed Entry Program. So 2 weekends a month, I would go out and run and exercise, take military classes, learn military traditions, Marine Corps traditions, with recruiters and other future recruits. So it was really kind of like a way to wet my feet with the military environment and background. But it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
And then how did you find out about Back on My Feet?
Well, my life spun out of control very, very quickly. And
this is after you're back from the Marines?
Yes, ma'am. My life spun out of control very, very quickly in the spring, summer of 2016. And fast forwarding, November 11th, 2016, I decided I didn't want to live that way anymore. So I went to the Veterans Hospital here in downtown Baltimore, and I said, I need to make a change. 3 days later, I found myself on the doorstep of an organization called the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training, which is
McVets, correct.
Right. Which is directly affiliated with Back on My Feet. And that is how we bridged the gap. That's how I became to know them.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Marine veteran Ian Brown, a former participant and now a volunteer with Back on My Feet, and Jacqueline Range, executive director of the nonprofit running group that combats homelessness through running and community support. So, boy, you sound like an athletic kind of guy. Why were you skeptical about Back on My Feet?
Well, the thing was, for me, through a whole process of my recovery, I've learned a number of things. And one of the most important things I learned was nothing changes if nothing changes. And at the present time, I had a very poisonous and toxic way of thinking, viewing life. So I was skeptical because, for me, it didn't make any sense why people who didn't know me would go out of their way to commit acts of kindness and show that they cared at 5:30 in the morning of all times. And it was just rather odd. It was it took a little warming up, for me to get used to. I had very, very low trust levels, especially when it came to females. So I had a lot of issues as far as the way I viewed people, the world, life. So it took some warming up. But it was through the staff members and the volunteers, they kind of chipped away at my exterior until finally, I came out of my shell. And I realized that I wanted a different way to live, but it all starts with the way I think. And kind of, it's like once my mind started going in one direction, kind of the rest of me kind of followed.
I went right past, but now I'm curious, when you say your life spun out of control, was that the reason for this shell?
So it was a culmination of a lot of problems that I just kept throwing dirt on top of. We all know eventually those problems come back out. And my only way to deal with it was through self-medication, we'll call it.
Drugs
and alcohol. And to calm the pain and the headaches and the nightmares, that's what I did. And it worked for a while. It worked for a good long while till it stopped working. And as I said, November 11th, it was the day I just said, I can't do this anymore. This is not who I am. This is not the person my parents raised. This is not the man the Marines made. I have to do something different. And fortunately for me, the VA hospital was there. It was a resource that opened the door for other resources like Back on My Feet. And honestly, organizations like this, to me, honestly, in my opinion, are a godsend.
Jacqueline, a lot of people listening might think, running? Mm-hmm. How can that possibly help the kind of dire situation your members are experiencing?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think on the surface, it doesn't quite make sense. And I think as an organization, we're realistic in recognizing you can run 5 miles or 500 miles. You know, that's not going to put a roof over your head. That's not going to keep you employed. I think we thrive in the space of relationships, you know, to surround people with a positive group of individuals who are up early and healthy, you know, out getting their miles in before the day starts and then going off to work. That's maybe a different environment than a lot of our teammates have been in before. I think the team environment also fosters a sense of accountability and discipline, whereby you can build back a self-esteem, you know, that's been destroyed, or you can build back the confidence that has always been there. And oftentimes, that's what you need to take that next step. You need the confidence. You need somebody to tell you that you're worth something, that you're valuable, that people are going to show up at 5 a.m. because they care about you. To be able to take that next step and go back and get your resume, go back and take that interview, go back and get that job. So there's something that we're trying to harness that happens out there on the runs in the morning and translate it into very concrete skills to move on a path towards self-sufficiency.
So do the resources that Ian referred to with back on my feet, do they start as soon as one shows up?
30 days. So you're out there for 30 days. And, you know, the first 30 days, you're just a teammate. You're expected to show up on time, 5:30 in the morning, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And after that 30 days, we sit down and do an orientation to the back half of our program, which opens up these doors and kind of explains what our curriculum is in terms of financial literacy classes and resume writing and expungements, tax clinics. You know, these are the resources that we can offer you if you want to take advantage of them.
Ian, what has helped you most from Back on My Feet?
Like Jackie just mentioned, the team environment, the accountability, looking at things differently. Things that are very, very familiar to me from being in the military as far as being accountable, being a part of an organization, time, being on time, reacclimating with those characteristics and helping me see that everything's not always black and white. There's actually colors out there. There's actually people that really do care. There are actually opportunities if you're willing to recommit yourself and shoot for a goal. There are doors that can and will open. So they really helped me change my way of thinking. Back to the way I used to think before my life started falling apart.
And how do you give back to the organization?
Well, what I do, because of my work demands, I'm not available to partake in a lot of the runs, the activities they have. So whenever Jackie or any of our other staff members have a speaking engagement or they want to pick my brain for ideas for future projects, that's what I do. Last year, I was fortunate enough to be selected as their keynote speaker for their annual fundraising gala, which was a huge honor. And I enjoyed it because it wasn't about me being in the spotlight. It was about me really being able to give thanks publicly to an organization of people that had done that much for me, but so much for so many other people.
Well, I'm grateful to you both for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much
for
having us.
Marine veteran Ian Brown, a former participant, now a volunteer with Back on My Feet, and Jacqueline Range, executive director of the nonprofit. Back on My Feet combats homelessness through running and community support. Back on My Feet invites everyone to put on their best cocktail attire and running sneakers for its 10th annual gala next Thursday, November 15th at 6 p.m. at the Baltimore Marriott Inner Harbor at Camden Yards, 110 South Utah Street. We've got more information at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. After the break, we'll hear from Polish Baltimoreans about the 100th anniversary of Polish independence. Stay tuned.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. In addition to Veterans Day, November 11th is Poland's Independence Day. Polish history stretches back 1,000 years, but all through the 19th century, the territory was part of the German, Austrian, and Russian empires. Poles reestablished independence at the end of World War I on November 11th, 100 years ago. On Sunday, after the Polish Mass at Holy Rosary Catholic Church in Upper Fells Point, several Polish-American groups will join in celebration, with two dance groups and children from the Saturday Polish Language and Heritage School. They'll sing songs like Rota. Of the many people of Polish descent in Maryland, some immigrated themselves, and some have been here for generations. What does the 100th anniversary of Polish independence mean to them? We'll ask two Polish-American amateur historians. Richard Paremski, the D.C. correspondent for the Polish-American Journal, is also vice president of the local council of the Polish-American Alliance. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you are. And Adam Mazurek, a retired Anne Arundel County librarian, for 3 decades has been a storyteller of Polish legends and folktales. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
Richard, can you give us in a nutshell how November 11th came to be Poland's Independence Day?
Yes. November 11th, that was the end of World War I. 11th hour, 11th day, 11th month. Then what happened was at the Treaty of Versailles and later on, our President Wilson, he had a program called 14 Points, and the 13th point of the 14 was the reestablishment of Poland as a sovereign state after it had been wiped off the map of Europe for the previous 128 years by the partitioning powers of Austria, Prussia, and Russia.
And so how do you describe the significance of Polish Independence Day to someone who doesn't know anything about it?
Well, it's very much like our 4th of July. I mean, the Polish nation was subjected and submerged or whatever by these foreign powers for over like 128 years. And therefore, it was their resurgence. They were back on the map. They were a nation again. And one of the main things that helped kept the nation together during those 128 years was the power of the Catholic Church, as it did during the communist times from 1945 to 1989.
So even though it had been submerged into these other empires through the 19th century, there was a cohesive Polish spirit.
It never died. They were always there. They were actually persecuted in certain areas of the three partitions. Some were worse than others. But as a cohesion thing, they never were separated. They were still brothers and sisters of Poland, sons and daughters of Poland.
Many folks don't know that during that time, there were at least three uprisings. In 1795, led by Tadeusz Kościuszko, who was a Pole who fought with the American Revolution, there was one in 1831, there was one in 1863, and a smaller one in 1905. So Richard is right, the Poles did not settle for, you know, being under foreign domination.
Adam Mazurek, you told me that you think the 100th anniversary resonates differently with different Polish Americans depending on their family history.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, I think it's got to do with how connected they are to the old country. The recent immigrants from the Solidarity era and modern times, you know, they're probably still dual citizens of Poland and maybe the United States too. They probably have active family. And folks in earlier generations, while they probably have some connections too, they may have less connections. And in the Polish communities in the U.S., the folk customs, the religious customs, they tended to be emphasized because those immigrants wanted to be Americans. So some of the history of what happened during the partitions in Poland maybe is not as well known.
And tell me about your own experience, your own family's experience.
Well, I'm a second generation. My grandparents emigrated from Russian Poland. They all came over individually, and they met in Baltimore and married.
So this was in the 1880s that they came?
No, early 1900s. In fact, the story I hear is that my grandfather Mazurek landed in Wilmington but came to Baltimore because he heard there was work cleaning up from the Baltimore fire in 1904.
Yeah. So Was Polish heritage always important to you?
The customs and traditions were. I didn't really know a lot about the history of the country until I ran into a cousin of mine after college. And we began talking about, you know, 1863 and 1831 and Kosciuszko. And he said, "Don't you know about this?" And I started reading, and I've been reading ever since.
Richard, what is your family story?
We emigrated mainly from the Silesia in Poland around the city of Katowice, 1870s, 1880s, something like that. And I am a second-generation American. My mother and father were born in America. 8 children in our family. And of all of them, I'm about the only one who really has carried the torch for Poland over the years.
So did either of you grow up celebrating November 11th as an important date?
When I was growing up, since I am 73 years old, it wasn't called Veterans Day then or whatever. It was called Armistice Day, which was the end of World War I, which is still a tremendous holiday celebration ceremonies in Europe to this day. And later on, it evolved into Veterans Day here in the United States.
But Polish Independence Day was a secondary identity to you for that day.
I have some books about Polish customs written in America for Polish Americans. They mention that Poland gained its independence in 1918, but they don't mention Independence Day per se. As a kid, I remember going to watch the Pulaski Brigade raise the flag at the memorial at St. Casimir School for the veterans, American Army veterans.
We're talking about Polish independence here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Adam Mazurek, who is the librarian for the Polish National Alliance's library in Baltimore, and with Richard Poremski, D.C. correspondent for the Polish American Journal. One connection between Baltimore and Polish independence at the end of World War I are the Polish Americans who volunteered to fight in Europe. Tell us about what's called Haller's Army.
Okay. Haller's Army, it was called the Blue Army because they were attached to the French Army in France. They landed in France because the French uniforms are blue. There was a total of 68,500 Polish Americans from the United States that volunteered for the Blue Army. And since the United States was not at war, we were neutral, they had to be trained in Canada at Niagara-on-the-Lake. So in the Baltimore connection was there was a total of 203 people, men, and they were mainly from the Curtis Bay area, from the Canton area, and from Fells Point. And out of the 203, 70 returned after the war, 73 were killed, and 60 remained in Poland to fight for Poland, for the newly established Polish state.
To illustrate what we were talking about earlier about the different generations, during the Second World War, the Polish government tried to do the same thing. They tried to recruit Polish Americans to fight in the Polish army because of the tremendous success they had during World War I or at World War I. But they were not successful at all. It was just a couple of hundred people that volunteered. This was to go and fight in the Polish army before Pearl Harbor. That later generation, I think they felt more American than ties to Poland.
So when you think about the attachments of Polish Americans to Polish heritage and culture, and I realize war is just one of the threads of history, what do you see young people today picking up in terms of their Polish heritage?
Mainly where the threads are now are in especially the Polish churches, the Polish cultural groups, the Polish organizations, and they are the main ones who are holding everything together. We're doing our best, especially at the Polish National Alliance. We have a Polish language class. We have a Polish library, cooking classes. We have a children's dance group called Krakowaki Dancers. We're doing our best in Baltimore to keep all the traditions alive to the degree that we can.
We also have a book club at the PNA and a movie circle that meets monthly, too. The dance groups are a great way to get the young involved, and oftentimes that's what starts the interest.
Sunday, November 11th, Polish Independence Day. What does it mean to you?
For me, I think about the Polish communities in Baltimore and all across the country who are struggling to stay together. Folks are moving away. The old churches are closing. And sometimes I get really discouraged, having been involved for a bunch of years in trying to keep Polish culture and Polish history alive in Baltimore. But then I think about the 123 years when there wasn't a Poland. The Polish men and women in the partitioned lands, they didn't give up. When I think about what's happened in Poland in the past 100 years, the terrible war, depression, communist domination, those Poles didn't give up either. So for me, it's kind of like an inspiration to say, don't you give up either.
Richard?
It's the power and the spirit of the Polish people. Of course, the blood is in my veins. First time I went to Poland was 1976 when it was under hard communist rule. So I've been there several times since then, so I've seen the transition. And it's just a blessing to go back there when I go and visit and just see the tremendous amount of progress that's been made. And my motto is America first, Poland always.
Well, I appreciate talking to both of you. I've enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Nie ma za co, which means you're welcome in Polish.
Adam Mazurek, a librarian, serves on the board of the Polish Heritage Association of Maryland and the National Cotton Memorial Foundation. Richard Poremski is vice president of Council 21 of the Polish National Association and chair of the National Cotton Memorial Foundation in Baltimore. Sunday is Polish Independence Day as well as Veterans Day. I'm Sheila Kass. Glad you're with us on The Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Kast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.